All right, let's get started. Some of you may be coming here and you heard that Glenn Miller stuff playing. You're going, I don't know any millennials listening to that. But the reality is that what we're going to be talking about today, we're working our way toward millennials so that by the time April rolls around, then we're now in the millennial generation. And the reason that I say that is you and I have to have an understanding of what previous generations look like so that we can understand millennials. So thank you for being here. And if there's any part of this that you're like, boy, I feel like I'm in school again, you kind of are. And it's called Sunday School. But I want to make it as interesting as possible. Actually, the first video that I'd like you to watch is one entitled In the Mood. That's the one that I'll have you watch. And it's Glenn Miller. And just listening, I mean, you heard some of you had Little Brown Jug a few minutes ago here. This is In the Mood. This was one of the hot numbers back in the 30s. I don't believe that Billboard, I don't even know if Billboard existed back then, but this would actually be a number one hit if there was one. And so it was just one of the ideas that was, or one of the songs that was a big deal. I'd like you to take a look at the page here that I have, Generations of the Last 500 Years. So look at that for a moment. And if you don't have this stuff, seriously, get the notes. I know some of you may not be note takers, and I actually don't have a bunch of blanks to fill in. It's just for you to have the information. But look at this. This is actually put together by a couple of guys named Strauss, William Strauss and Neil Howe, and it's from a book called Generations, The History of America's Future. And this goes all the way back. This one actually goes all the way back to the 1400s. And what these two gentlemen started to see was a cyclical approach to history. You'll see that this happens in different people that are analyzing, looking back on history. And they'll say, oh, this is what happened, and this brought this to case. We have that in a biblical sense in the book of Judges, if you remember the pattern that they would be doing okay, and then they'd take their eyes off the Lord, and they'd get comfortable, and then they'd ultimately turn toward idolatry and move from idolatry to a place where he had to break them again. He'd bring like the Midianites or the Philistines in, and that would break them, and then ultimately they would bow the knee again and stuff like that. Well, these guys look at the last 500 years and they divide it by generations. Now, if you believe something strongly, you will see it in everything. You guys know that. If you have something concerning sports, every time receivers do this, this is what happens, and you believe it, and so you see it in everything. You see what you want to see, and so Strauss and Howe see this pattern in generations. The reason that I wanted to start with the GI generation, those born between 1901 and 1924, is because when it comes to the cycle, they believe there's four routines. GI and millennials seem to be the most that have each other in common. Does that make sense? We're now in the fourth thing. So we'll move from millennial to silent. Silent generation is the one after, and we'll explain that next week, why it's called the silent generation. Then baby boomers, and then Gen X, or the 13th generation. They call them the 13th generation because they're the 13th generation since America was founded, okay? So I say all that to you so that you can have an understanding of why would you be talking about this? But so first of all, a question to answer is, what does GI mean? Does everybody know what GI means? GI, you ever hear of GI Joe? Let me explain, because you might have been using that term, GI, and you never knew what it meant. GI is a noun used to describe the soldiers of the United States Army and the airmen of the United States Army Air Forces, and for U.S. Marines and sailors, and also for general items of their equipment. The term GI has been used as an initialism of government issue or general issue. So now you know what G.I. Joe means, government issue Joe, all right, or general issue Joe. But it originally referred to galvanized iron as used by the logistics services of the United States Armed Forces. And so G.I. was used to denote equipment made from galvanized iron, such as metal trash cans in United States Army inventories and supply records. So that's where the phrase GI comes from. This generation is also called the greatest generation. And it's called that because Tom Brokaw wrote a book called The Greatest Generation right here. And it was about that generation. Let me show you another video here. Another video. We'll just start it on the greatest generation. Some things that impacted them so that ultimately they became like they were.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
In the weeks that followed the bombing of Pearl Harbor, America sent a young man halfway around the world, in both directions, not to conquer, not to pillage, not to loot, but to liberate. And they did, not only in the occupied countries, but in Germany and Japan too. One veteran, when asked what it all meant, said that he felt that he had done his part in turning the 20th century from one of darkness into one of light. Another said,
"Listen, I was 18 years old and had my whole life ahead of me. I had been taught the difference between right and wrong, and I didn't want to live in a world in which wrong prevailed, so I fought."
And fought they did. They came from all corners of the United States, from different backgrounds, different religions, different classes. Some have been farmers or coal miners, store clerks, teachers, truck drivers, lawyers, and the like. Just 2 days after Pearl Harbor, President Franklin D. Roosevelt spoke to a frightened nation.
"We are now in this war. We're all in it, all the way. Every single man, woman, and child is a partner in the most tremendous undertaking of our American history. We must share together the bad news and the good news, the defeats and the victories, the changing fortunes of war."
We believed we were immortal. We believed we were doing a great thing. And we really believed in the crusade which we hoped would liberate the world from man.
In 1941, FDR spoke for the first time of the four freedoms, those unalienable rights that belong to every person in every part of the world.
"The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world. The third is freedom from want, which translated to world terms means economic understanding, which will secure to every nation a healthy, peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear, which translated into the world terms means a worldwide reduction of armaments to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor anywhere in the world.
But these freedoms were not without cost. Great battles were fought in nearly every corner of the world.
Did you notice that Franklin Roosevelt was an amazing communicator, and he knew what was needed to be said at the time that it was being said? And you even see that after he did that speech, Norman Rockwell, who was the great artist of that day, created covers for the Saturday Evening Post, but he also just created artwork that covered each one of those freedoms, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And so how are we going to do that? And the GI generation believed that they did exactly what was needed to make that happen. And so bringing it home for us, I don't know how many of you, and maybe you didn't know, my dad was born in 1924. So he was on the tail end of the GI generation. I would venture to say that I don't know if we even have any people in this room right now that were born between 1901 and 1924, and I won't put you on the spot, okay? But if you ever had discussions with them, they look at life completely different. They're just ecstatic that they went through the Great Depression, they went through things, and so you'll see them at, why do they always want to go to Old Country Buffet? Why are they always going to that? Here's why. Let me get this straight. I can go up and get food, go and eat, and then I can come up and get more? Such a deal. Why would they be thinking that way? Well, if you went through what they went through, that's the way you'd be thinking. I've gone on college trips over the years to take youth groups to colleges and stuff like that. And I was raised by a GI generation guy. And so you finish everything on your plate. So I'm going through it, and it's good food. In my mind, it's good food. That you'll ask them, is it good food? It stinks. You know, I'm going, this is amazing. I would have loved this, you know. And you'll go, and they'll eat 2 bites or 3 bites of a piece of pizza. And you see them just taking it and throwing it away. And I'm going, how does that happen? And it doesn't even bother them. And some of you might be sitting there, I do that. That bugs older generation people. You say, well, that's why they're so fat. There you go. You know. I'm serious. You can't win with that one. And so there's times where, or in business meetings when I was growing up, and I watched the different people from different generations and what was dear to them or what was important to them. For example, to them, money was important. To the younger generation, time is important. So earlier generations, when it comes to the grass out here, they would go, I'll come and mow. I haven't seen my family all day, but I'll still come. You get a lawnmower and I'll mow this lawn. The younger generation goes, let's just pay somebody to do it. I want to spend time with my family. Now, there's strengths in both. Does that make sense? But you can see in meetings, why don't we have somebody here mowing the lawn? I did it for 47 years. Why isn't somebody? But it's a complete paradigm shift. And so when we start to understand what somebody went through and why they did or what happened to them, it has impact on how they view different things. So let's look through some of this stuff and your notes here underneath the raising of the flag for Iwo Jima. I just want to work through some of these things together so that we can have an understanding of this. Then I want to look in the scriptures for a little bit at some things, and then I want to open it up for questions. Not that I'm the generation's answer man, but we may have some thoughts or coming together. So look at this, GI facts under there. Oh, actually, the age location, what was the impacting parts for them? Great Depression and World War II crisis in rising adulthood. So this is what impacted them. And as time goes by, you'll see each generation has something happen that impacts them. There's an event, there's an experience that they collectively have that, and the war was it. That was the thing that had the greatest impact. When you talk to the old guys, you'll see veterans of foreign wars, you'll see these guys, and their number is slowly but surely diminishing. There's VFW halls actually closing because we've been blessed to have peacetime for so long. But they opened at this time, after this time, because all these guys came home and they had a camaraderie that they had, and so they want to get together. Let's have a beer, let's play poker, let's do this, let's do that. And that was because they had experienced all of that together, and to come back and make that shift, amazing. Well, look at this. From first to last, the GIs have been a generation of trends, always in the directions of most people, certainly their missionary elders. Now, I want you to have an understanding. When it uses certain terms, like it'll say missionary or it'll say lost, you have to look at this generations thing of the generations before it so that you understand, oh, he's not talking about a person that's evangelizing. He's talking about a segment of the generations here. And so, thought for the better. Lower rates of suicide and crime. Higher aptitudes, greater educational attainment, increased voter participation, and rising confidence in government. Do we have that today? Okay. So when Glenn Miller is playing In the Mood, you can't help but be happy. It's happy music. Why? Because they were hopeful. We have the power to win wars. We are amazing. There was probably some fear, but we're going to get through this. And then when they win a war, wow, these guys, there's nothing that can stop us. That's the way they're thinking. And so that impacts how they're viewed in their families, how they're raising their children, how they're viewing things. And then we have different generations that come up and react to these people. Look at that underneath that. Throughout the GI life cycle, the federal government has directed its attention to whatever age bracket the GIs have occupied. Now, does that make sense to you? As GIs are growing up, the government focuses their attention on them. A younger generation could raise up, and that's why they're called the silent generation, the next one. The GIs got all the focus. So if you could imagine, you're living in a house. If a house was represented by the different generations, as this is going through, the GI in your house is the favorite brother. He's the favorite sister. And the government, every rule, every law that happens benefits them. And so as they grow older, the focus is constantly on them. They just walk through life and everything's about them. And so when times go, they're like surprised when people start complaining. When people, like, and by the way, certain races didn't do well. Because some people say, oh, if we could just get back to those times when you were black in those days, it wasn't good for you. If you were a woman, it wasn't. And you could say, oh, no, they had it great. Well, they were living in the midst of it. But in comparison, there was a lot of things that weren't good about it. So let's keep going here. So see all these things that the government sets up as GIs are going through it? So when a GI born... Now look at this one will really get you talking about taxes at the end of that paragraph. When a GI born in 1910 turned 19, the federal government consumed less than 3% of the nation's economic product. When he reached age 70, it consumed over 22%. Can you see as time goes by how the government takes more and more? And so other generations come along and they're like, this generation likes government. But as time goes by, others are, man, everything's being taxed. I mean, look at it now. I don't even know the number. I don't want to know the number, okay? Look at money. The rate of child labor fell by half during the GI youth era, the largest one generation decline ever. They were the first boys and girls whose pin money came from allowances for good behavior, not from earnings. So this is the first generation that wasn't in the coal mines per se. There's starting to be a separation between what a child is raised like and what an adult is raised like. And as time goes by, the gap between those things called adolescence gets wider and wider and wider. They put 3/4 of their allowance money into school supplies, church boxes, that's offering, or savings. From the mid-1920s to the early 1930s, the proportion of youth doing the family dishes rose from 32 to 52%. That's a good word. Even as more adults remained at home. Look at this under health. In most measures of health, the GIs have shown a swifter improvement over their next elders than any other adult American generation. From the 1900 to 1924 cohorts, infant and child mortality fell by 50%. Adult height rose by over 1 inch. And life expectancy at age 65 rose by 20%. Raised on pasteurized milk, safely packaged foods and vitamins, coming-of-age GIs did indeed appear to missionary and lost elders as the brawny, world-moving youth shown in WPA murals. Now, I don't know if you know what a WPA mural is, but during Franklin Roosevelt was president. In fact, if you can take a look on, I have a picture here, about 3 or 4 pages, you'll see, you can't fool everybody but God and your conscience. Give a full day's work, back up our battle skies. There were posters all over the place during the Depression and during the during World War II. And they were they're almost like memes of today, if you could imagine that. But they were serious, okay? And they were a way of rallying the country. And so they'd have these pictures of youth that were just like fantastic. It was, some of it was propaganda, but, and so the older generation people would look at it and go, man, look at them. It's almost like this. I don't know if you guys, if you follow sports enough to know that the athletes of today are amazing. Like they're chiseled human beings. Like they're made in such a way that you just go up to them. And in fact, it's almost discouraging. Not right now, I'm working out for this Tough Mudder, and I'll look at like LeBron's body. LeBron James, okay, in case you're wondering who that is. LeBron James' body, and it's not fair. It's not fair. I'll look in the mirror and I'll go, really? At this point, I think I've lost like between 15 and 17 pounds since the Super Bowl. Super Bowl Sunday was my Fat Tuesday, okay? And so I'm looking at that and I go, oh, but have you ever looked at the athletes of today compared to the athletes like of the 1950s or even the times? Like Jesse Owens was like incredibly fast. He would look like he's standing still with Usain Bolt. That's what they were seeing. The older generation is watching the GIs and going, GI generation going, what is the deal? Well, they were getting better nutrition. They weren't having to work in the coal mines and having black lung at the age of 13, okay? There were some great things happening there. And so this generation is rising up, and it's incredible when the response. Look at this. GIs produced by far the largest one-generation jump in educational achievements in American history. From lost, the lost generation, to GI, the average length of schooling rose from the 9th grade level to the 12th. So this is now, senior year of high school is now looked at as a normal thing to accomplish. But before that, I want to ask you to think about this. Have you ever sat down and talked to your old grandpa? And ask them about life. And just take the time to sit and listen to them. And you'll find out, yeah, I only went to 9th grade. I had to go do this. I had to go there. And you'll come and like, wow. My dad, as time goes by, I found out my dad lived in an orphanage. And his dad and mom, well, his mom died. His dad was an alcoholic that just beat his mom. Ultimately, she died. I never even met her. He was finally with another woman named Mary. But my dad was put into an orphanage because his dad was an alcoholic. And this happened a lot. This kind of stuff happened a lot. And we go, you know, people look, oh, times are so bad. Times have always been bad, okay? There's bad stuff in every generation. It's just certain things were hidden more. The reality is we have more information now about what's going on. So anyways, look at this one down here. Nearly the entire array of the modern scouting organizations were founded by midlife missionaries, which is the generation before that, just when first wave GIs were reaching puberty. So Boy Scouts started in 1910. Campfire Girls, Girl Scouts, and 4-H clubs. From their scouting days forward, GIs have been, listen to this, have been the most uniformed generation in American history. As young adults, 2.5 million wore the CCC, that's another New Deal thing from FDR, Forest Green. Nearly half, this is amazing, nearly half of all GI men wore a military uniform in wartime. Can you see why the war is the thing that they always talk about? And I'm not even meeting GI guys when I go through the McDonald's section in the middle there. It's most of them are silent generation guys, but every one of them, they're not wearing, no offense, they're not wearing Cardinal caps, they're not wearing Cub caps, they're not wearing, here's what they're wearing. Navy, Marines, that's where they put all of their stuff. A little while back, Awana was making some changes because Awana came out of a militaristic history. They were looking, and in fact, you look, a lot of the things that even Christian organizations were starting had militaristic names. Campus Crusade, okay? Crusade's like a war, okay? And so all of these parachurch organizations start coming into play after, sometimes in the midst of the Depression or the midst of World War II. And Awana was one of them, and they had these uniforms. They were like, in fact, when you describe it to people growing up, hey, you want to come to Awana? What's Awana? I want to come to Awana. You know, what would? Well, it's like Christian Boy Scouts. That's what I would say, or Christian Girl Scouts, because they had uniforms. Something happened, and this raised a big stink in the church that I was in past. There were people going, we're tired, because the shirts, I don't know if you ever saw the old Awana shirts, they look like bowling shirts. They literally, like every time I'd wear it, I would but you'd wear it, and you even had a tie, or a neckerchief, and it was, so it was like Boy Scouts, and stuff like that. So this other generation comes along, and they go, we don't want to wear uniforms anymore. We'll just wear a t-shirt and put the word Awana on it. We had a meeting about that in the church. You would think this was like an attempt at the 11th commandment or something. Literally, it was like written in stone. And you had older guys getting up, and it was all they could do to get up.
I just think this is a sign of the times that we're getting rid of these uniforms. And I would be sitting back going, are you kidding?
Well, why would it be dear to them? They look at a uniform as, why wouldn't you want to be a part of something like this? And it was very collective. It was very dear to them. And we're raising it. Like, even if you watch the ads for the Army, you ever hear, see those ads for the Army? What does it say? Join the Army. An army of one. It's all about the individual. And so even in their advertising, they're changing how it's looked at. An older guy will go, I don't want an army of one. I want a guy on my back. I want a guy taking care of me. All right? I want to have a camaraderie here. And that's this generation here. Look at this. What, next paragraph. While the best known lost heroes were individuals, Eddie Rickenbacker and Jimmy Doolittle, the enduring GI heroes have been collective. The flag raisers at Iwo Jima, the boys of D-Day, the Seabees, Newt Rockne and George Gipp were lost. Okay, part of the lost generation. So they were individuals, and that was elevated at that time. The Four Horsemen were GIs. Four Horsemen is a line from football. Okay, then you look at elections here. From 1930s forward, the GIs have been the only generation to support the winning candidate in every election. In all three close elections, 1948, 1960, and 1968, GIs tipped the outcome to their preferred candidate. So, 48, I think that was Truman. 60 was Kennedy, and 68 was Nixon. All of them, GI generation. And the GIs voted for them. But the next generation does not have one presidential candidate. Silent generation. You don't hear from them at all. Thus the word silent. All right. And you see here, GIs also include the first generation of blacks to abandon the Party of Lincoln. Party of Lincoln is the Republican Party. I don't know if you knew that. You'll hear it during the GOP conventions and things like that. But this is the generation that made the move. All the way up to that, in a response to thankfulness for what Lincoln did concerning slavery, they stayed with the Republican Party. This generation comes along and they make an adjustment. And the biggest adjustment is because FDR starts to appeal to them socially and things along. In fact, FDR's wife actually goes to bat more for blacks than any other first lady. And so they jump into the Democratic Party at that point. So you can see the shifts that are going on. My dad, I remember one time I'm sitting in a history class, Mr. Schultz in United States history, junior year of high school for me. And it was the first time I had ever heard anybody say anything negative about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Because around my house, my dad, I'm surprised he wasn't like the fourth part of the Trinity, honestly. He loved FDR. And here's why. In his mind, FDR saved our country. So I get into a class and I'm sitting there and this teacher starts telling about all these different socialism coming into our school, into our country and stuff like that. And it all started with the New Deal. And he's saying all this stuff about FDR and I'm going, okay, does he know who he's talking about? He's talking about the fourth person. No, he's talking about this, the guy that's my dad's hero. And so you've got a generation of that is thinking this way. And just an amazing response to government. Let's go to the back page, because this kind of gives it in a nutshell. Look at the back page. Over 63 million strong, just over 2 million are living today. So they're dying out quickly, okay? Look at what, having a strong sense of personal civic duty, which means they vote. They believe in marriage for life. Exhibiting strong loyalty to family, jobs, groups, schools. They reject the idea of retirement. They expected to work until they died or couldn't work anymore. They launched the labor union movement. They practice frugality. Use it up, fix it up, make it do, or do without it. So if you ever watch like certain churches being put together and you go, man, what is the deal? There's more duct tape holding this thing together. That's because at business meetings years ago, some guy thought he could fix this for cheaper. That's just how it is. And it's not a bad thing. It's just that's how it functions. And why would they think that way? Because they didn't have money to do any of that. So they would do that. And so when you see that, you go, oh, that's why they did that. It makes sense. Growing up in a church society, they treasure traditions which they believe lead to unity. Doing the right thing just because it's right and not bragging about it. GIs, this is a quote from Generations, GIs have been the confident and rational problem solvers of the 20th century America. The ones who knew how to get things done. First as soldiers, Rosie the Riveter, later as builders of highways and rockets, and lastly as aging presidents of the era of democracy's triumph over communism. They brought cheerfulness, public spirit, and collective muscle to every problem they encountered. They had the right stuff. FDR says in the Democratic Convention of 1936, this generation is a rendezvous with history. Well, let's look at what the Word says. And if you want to take notes on the bottom, just want to give you some verses of how God calls on us to view the elderly. He calls on us to view the elderly as beautiful. When you see an old person, there's something beautiful about watching the Asian culture and their response to older people. It's an honor watching. It's a blessing watching that. The treatment of an older person. I watch a lot of times the disrespect that goes on. Everybody's in a hurry. Everybody, they'll bump into them. No excuse me's. No gratefulness. No willingness to slow down and appreciate. There's a beauty to, and we need to look at them as beautiful. Proverbs, if you want to write this verse down, Proverbs 16:31. Gray hair is a crown of glory, it is gained by living a godly life. They're also worthy of honor. Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor your father and mother. Leviticus 19, verse 32. Thou shalt rise up in respect before the hoary head. Now that word may, hoary head, what? That's gray hair. I want to say no hair, but it's gray hair, right? And honor the face of the old man. Job 32, 4 through 6. Elihu had waited till Job and the others had spoken because they were elder than he. Isn't that a beautiful verse? Instead of right away, I got an idea, I'm going to speak up. You let the older ones talk first, and then now I'll speak. Because they're in their wisdom, they may say some stuff that you're like, oh man, what I was going to say is going to sound really dumb. Okay? And then Proverbs 23, verse 22. Hearken unto thy father, and despise not, or respect thy mother when she is old. So this is God's calling on our lives as we look at this older generation.